is Jared the GM on ESPN 102.5, the game online at thegamenashville.com. He's the GM, Floyd Reese. I'm Jared Stillman. Floyd, I want us to make a promise before we even get into this next topic.
That's never a good sign.
Will you just say okay?
No.
Can we agree that the Bill Belichick theory about stats applies for the rest of this topic and discussion?
That stats really don't matter?
Bill Belichick was asked one time about the stats. Bill said, I don't care about stats. Stats are for losers. The scoreboard is for winners. That was what Belichick said. Can we agree with that? That stats don't matter and the scoreboard is for winners?
Well, yeah, but I mean, the next press conference, like when he was playing the Titans, I mean, what was it? Hey, they've got the 10th ranked defense and they've got, I mean, it depends on. Bill uses stats like everybody else.
Yeah, he cherry picks them.
Sure.
Which is what everybody does.
If they help.
But we have to, but I want to say right now, because you got on me about stats earlier today. Not when we, when I complained about Mike Vrabel having the 32nd
right.
most points allowed or whatever in the NFL. So let's just, for this argument, throw stats to the side. Fair?
No, because obviously they're going to favor me or we wouldn't even be having this discussion.
Honest to God, I don't know what side of the discussion you're going to be on. But
I'm sensing that you, part of my argument is going to be those stats will be important to you.
Everybody
argued. Guessing.
Everybody argued in 2016, Marcus Mariota was really good. And in 2017, Marcus Mariota was really, really bad. Like, that is the common belief. Adam Schefter on SportsCenter after Mike Mularkey got fired said this.
I think the biggest disappointment with that organization is you look at Marcus Mariota's numbers. And yes, he played hurt this year and fought through a lot of physical adversity. But the fact of the matter is the numbers have regressed each year in the NFL. They have a quarterback who was picked number two in the NFL and has not developed the way that they or anybody liked. And if you spoke to coaches around the league, they said that his growth was stunted. And in fact, you could even argue he regressed.
So Adam Schefter saying he regressed, which we heard a lot about Marcus in 2017. A lot of people said it. Now, this is where I differ from everybody else. I don't know if I don't buy that Marcus was a lesser quarterback in 2017 than he was in 2016. The reason I think Marcus struggled this year compared to last year was DeMarco Murray was hurt this year. Mariota at times was really hurt this year. Corey Davis was hurt this year. Taywan Taylor couldn't get on the football field. Anthony Fasano, who was a reliable player, was out. Jonnu Smith, who is a penalty machine, was in. I just feel like the line didn't block as well. I don't think Mariota himself is a worse quarterback in 2017 than he was 2016. This whole talk of him regressing and Marcus regressed and Marcus stunk and Marcus was that, I just don't believe it. Now, do I think there were serious coaching issues as far as everybody else, i.e. the receivers running the right routes? Yes. The offensive line blocking right? Yes. But I don't think Mariota in 2017 is a worse quarterback than Mariota in 2016.
Well, in my opinion, I don't think there's any doubt but that he's worse. But I agree with you. The whole offense was worse. And I think therein lies the problem. Because when you go from, you know, the number one red zone offense in the NFL to where you can't score a touchdown, I mean, people look at that and they go, what's going on here? Aren't you supposed to improve over where you were last year, especially with a young quarterback and with all of this? This is my biggest problem. All of those things you said were exactly right. If you had a franchise quarterback, he would have played above a bunch of that.
So does Oakland not have a franchise quarterback?
Maybe not. I mean, they just paid him $120 million or whatever it was. But I think that's the question you have to ask. You know, would another quarterback have been able to play over some of that? And because it doesn't, if your offense is really, really bad, and I'm the one that kept saying he was a reflection of the offense. And I think that's true. But in his third year, you wanted him to step above all the fray, to rise above all the fray, play better than what's going on. And that didn't happen. The truth is that he kind of fell down with the rest of that mess.
Drew Brees, 3-9 in his third year. Peyton Manning missed the playoffs, struggled in his fourth year. I mean, I'm not saying that Mariota's Drew Brees. I'm not saying he's Peyton Manning. But Peyton Manning, in his third year, led the league in completions, led the league in touchdowns, led the league in yards, third-year Peyton Manning, 33 touchdowns, 15 picks. Fourth-year Peyton Manning, 26 touchdowns, 23 picks. Did Peyton regress, or was there something wrong that year with Jim Mora or whatever else was going on, and that being the issue that led to Peyton?
Was that the year Jim got fired?
Yes.
Yeah, there's obviously something wrong.
Right, okay. But my whole point is the idea that Mariota's regressing, I just don't believe. Did Peyton regress? I don't think Peyton regressed. Peyton's numbers were worse, but Peyton didn't necessarily regress. And then, you know, Peyton's career averaged out to a great career because he was a great quarterback. Drew Brees, 3-9 in his third year. Drew Brees ultimately averaged out to being a great quarterback because he is a great quarterback. I think the thing that we gloss over way too much was how important DeMarco Murray was to what the offense was supposed to be able to do. I mean, that's why I honestly, from watching it with my eyes and not just the stats, I think DeMarco Murray's injury was the number one thing that held this team back this year. Coaching, Robiskie, number two. But DeMarco's injury. DeMarco was the lead horse in everything the offense did last year. This year he wasn't. So I actually think Mariota played better than he did in 2016 because he had more to do on his plate.
Oh, you can't get there now. You can't get there. You
got no
chance.
He had to throw it more this year.
You got no chance. You can try and try and try and throw.
They were throwing it like 20 times a game.
Do it whatever.
In 2016.
Any way you want, but you can't get there.
Oh, I stand by it. I felt like in 2016, the goal was to have Marcus throw it as little as possible. And in 2017, Marcus could make those plays. You know, Marcus, in games they won in 2016, Marcus threw it 33, 33, 24, 20, 23, 29, 22, 26. So anywhere under 30, Marcus gave you a chance to win. This year, Marcus was throwing it way more. In games that they came around and won, Marcus Mariota was throwing it 34 times, 44 times, 32 times, 32, 23, 22, 21. Like, Marcus was throwing the ball 40 times and you were winning. That's, to me, growing up as a quarterback. And then all the other guys screwing up. And we're just talking about Marcus. I'm not defending the coaching right now. I'm defending Marcus. As far as the other guys screwing up, and what was the most uncomfortable press conference last Sunday, Mike Mularkey's last press conference, Mike said something about Marcus and his stats that I think rub a lot of people the wrong way, but I think there's a whole heck of a lot of truth in, and this was when Mike was asked about the stats on Marcus. Here's what Mike said.
He had to work through some injuries that had a lot to do with why those numbers where they were. I think... And again, we're going to do, just like I said, we're going to look back at everything, do a self-scout. I can promise you all the interceptions did not fall on Marcus, okay? I can tell you the last one did not fall on Marcus. I mean, I can go through. It's everybody's involved when it comes to turnovers. And unfortunately, he's the guy that gets pegged for it. He gets that number attached to him, but everybody's involved.
See, I totally agree with that. I can just think off the top of my head. Corey Davis doesn't clear Marcus Peters out, interception. Rashard Matthews at Arizona doesn't run the right route, interception. Harry Douglas doesn't come back to the football at Indianapolis, interception. At Pittsburgh, Corey Davis came out the day after the game, said he cost Marcus two of those interceptions, interception. There was one game where the ball hit the guy in the hands, popped in the air, interception. Marcus, when people bring up the touchdowns to interceptions, I mean, how many touchdowns did they drop this year? Corey Davis dropped one against the Bengals. Matthews dropped one against the Bengals. Delaney dropped two in the span of a month. I mean, so you're talking about four touchdowns right there that Marcus didn't get. So I agree with Mike there. I think the interceptions were a team problem and the receivers were a coaching problem, or the receivers just aren't that good. But again, not a Marcus problem. I don't think Marcus regressed as much as everybody thinks he did. In fact, again, I don't think Marcus regressed at all. I think Marcus is a better quarterback today than he was this time last year. But the stats might not say that. But as Bill Belichick said, stats are for losers. The scoreboard is for winners. Marcus did win a playoff game, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, he did.
Your thoughts on Marcus's regression?
I have no. I mean, I can't even.
So you disagree with what Mike said there about the interceptions?
I can't even respond to that. I mean, I can't. I'm not even going to try.
I mean, do you disagree with what Mike said about the interceptions being a team issue and not a Marcus issue?
Some are, sure. Absolutely. Receivers made some mistakes. I don't think there's any doubt about it.
How many times this year did Marcus throw a pass where we literally said, Marcus, what are you doing?
Considering that we said it probably two or three times a game last year, a lot more than it should have been.
See, I disagree.
Okay.
The two ones
where
I—
Why do you ask me that?
The two ones that I looked at were like when Marcus played Pittsburgh and he just overshot the guy and threw a pick and you're like, what are you doing? And then the Rams at the beginning of the game where you're like, what was that? I mean, Marcus had those moments, but I don't think he had as many this year as people think. And if you just look at the stats, I don't think that tells a fair story of his season. So if you want to blame the coaching, you can. If you want to blame Murray being hurt and Mariota being hurt and the injuries, which again, I don't like to blame injuries, but you can. If you want to blame the receivers stinking, you can do that. If you want to blame the coaching of the receivers, which I blame, you can do that. But I just don't believe that Mariota regressed as much as everyone is just making it out to be.
Okay.
Do you think he regressed as much as everyone makes it out to be?
I just answered that question. You went on a tirade for 10 minutes. I just answered it.
615-737-1025 is the phone number. Jared and the GM at ESPN 1025. The game.
I think we have a lot of areas to improve. But again, I think throughout this entire season, we didn't play a complete game of football. One phase plays well, the other one doesn't. And again, tonight we just didn't make enough plays.
Why weren't you guys able to put together a full game this season?
That's a great question. And we've got a lot of time to reflect on that. And at first glance, I'm not sure. But again, hopefully we can correct that and just kind of get every phase playing at the best that they can.
Marcus Mariota after the game at New England on Saturday. And I think the answer to Marcus's question, why couldn't you play a game for 60 minutes, and Marcus turning around and saying, I don't know, is why the coach is fired. I mean, that's part of John said consistency in the press conference a lot on Monday.
And you get that first drive where you actually look like the real deal.
We talked about it during the break. That was a great drive.
Disappears. It's gone. You never see it again.
You know, we never talked about the New England game because we didn't really have the opportunity to do so because, you know, the coach was fired before we came on at 2 o'clock. But that one drive where they went 90 yards and scored a touchdown to go up 7-0, that was a great drive. You know, Henry moved the ball on first and second down when he got the opportunity to run. Henry moved the ball. That gave you third and manageable. Mariota was money on third down, running, throwing, guys got open. You know, Davis beats Malcolm Butler, a Pro Bowl caliber corner, one-on-one for a one-handed catch in the end zone for a touchdown. That was a great drive. The problem is, we didn't see any more drives like that the rest of the night.
And I mean, really, I haven't seen many drives like that over the last 4 or 5 weeks.
And that's the thing where, like, I look at that drive, and I think to myself, that's what Marcus can be. And I think Marcus is good enough to be that. And that's where that I hear a lot of people say, well, Marcus got worse, but then I see a drive like that, and I know he can do. Like, what he did on that drive, Jake Locker cannot do that stuff. Jake Locker's not accurate enough with the football to have a drive like that. 11 plays, 95 yards in 5 minutes. Mariota complete for 36 at the five. By the way, how does Belichick let Delanie Walker get wide open for 36 yards on a first?
Phenomenal.
10 at the five. 36 to Delanie. Derrick Henry gain of 3. Then you get a 3rd and 7. Mariota scramble for 11. Great. Henry, gain of 3. Henry, gain of 4. Now you're in 3rd and 3. Mariota, complete to Matthews for 8. Move the ball for a first down. 1st and 10, Mariota incomplete. Mariota runs again, gain of 11. Now you're in a second down, you're in a first down. Henry goes 4 yards, and then you hit Corey Davis for a touchdown. Beautiful drive. I just think that's what Mariota can be. Let's go right back to the calls. CJ is up next on Marcus Mariota. What's up, CJ?
How you guys doing?
Good.
I have to agree with the GM. Mariota, if you look at him, he's not a franchise. He's not an elite quarterback. I get what you're saying. Stats, you can throw him at the window at this point. Looking at the game, he's not producing anything offensively. If you're looking at other quarterbacks, you know, old generations, like you're talking about Breeze and Peyton, they're not predicated on the run. They're not basing anything off of all these excuses you were saying that he needs. If a quarterback's going to be elite, you want him to be able to elevate the team, whether he has a running game or not, whether the defense is strong or not. I think game in, game out, there was never a threat at Marcus Mariota beating you. It was more so, can the running game beat you? And so at that point, I think you have to look at, you know, what options you have, because, yeah, we have a good running game moving forward, but I don't think Marcus Mariota is going to win the Titans a Super Bowl.
I think that's you can have that take. The one thing, and I appreciate your call, CJ, the one place I would disagree, when Breeze and Peyton were young quarterbacks, they had really good running games. Like, you remember Edger and James in the running game that Indy had back then. I mean, Edger and James was the leading rusher in the NFL, right? Like that 99 season?
I can't remember if he was a leading rusher, but he is a good running back.
And then when Breeze was in San Diego, they had LaDainian Tomlinson, who's in the Hall of Fame. So Breeze and Manning had good running games when they were younger quarterbacks.
Right, but Breeze wasn't there very long, you know.
Well, but Breeze got his first Pro Bowl in San Diego, and then they had to franchise tag him. And Rivers sat on the bench for a year, well, for 2 years, and then Breeze got hurt, and so he signed with New Orleans.
No, he wasn't there that long, was he?
Yeah, Breeze got, I think
like
Breeze
5 years?
I think so, yeah.
Look it up. I thought he was there.
We did this exact exercise last year.
I thought he was only there like 3 years.
No, the third year was 3-9. Then they drafted Rivers. They wanted Rivers to sit on the bench for a year, and then Breeze made the Pro Bowl the year that they wanted. Like the transition year, Breeze made the Pro Bowl. So they franchised Breeze to bring him back for one more year, so Rivers sat the bench for 2 years. Breeze got 5 years, got hurt in the season finale, and that was when Nick Saban tried to sign Breeze, but the doctors wouldn't let him in Miami. And that was, so Rivers sat the bench for 2 years. Breeze got 2 years there, so he was there for 5 total years in San Diego. By the way, how can you be such a crappy franchise and have 2 great quarterbacks for 20 years?
That's just what we're talking about.
Let's go to Kyle, let's go to Andy, who's up next on Mariota. Thanks for calling. What's up, Andy?
Hey, guys. Love the show, as always. Have to say, I agree with Jared on this, but I've noticed over the last couple days with this coaching search that Jared and the GM, you guys are getting feisty. I can hear it on the radio. The GM's blood pressure is going up, and so I want to raise that feud, if I can, just a little bit. I know that Jared Stillman went to the University of Louisville, and right now with everything going on with their athletic director and not having one, maybe like an OC or head coach, bring in the GM's guy. Bring in Bobby Petrino. I'll hang up and listen.
God, I would love that. Oh, would I love Bobby Petrino on the Titans? You know why I'd love Bobby Petrino on the Titans?
I have no clue.
Because then he wouldn't be coaching Louisville anymore, thank goodness.
Wow.
No, I mean, I think, what was Trump's blood pressure yesterday, where it was like perfect or whatever? That's the GM's blood pressure right now.
It was like 122 over 72 or something like that.
122 over 74.
There you go.
Yeah. That's what the GM's blood pressure is right now.
My blood pressure wasn't that when I was 3.
Let's go to Thomas, who's up next on Mike Malarkey. What's up, Thomas?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I just have a quick comment about Malarkey. I guess the one thing that that got me with Malarkey, it seemed that for the first half, or that he just couldn't adjust, you know, from one half to the other. It's like we can't make any adjustments until halftime, and everyone wants the next young Sean McVay. And I really don't care how old.
So
or how
you don't think Mike
is.
Made any adjustments at halftime against Kansas City when they were down 21-3 at the half and they went on a 9-0 run?
He made adjustments at halftime, but it took till halftime to make adjustments. I'm saying make adjustments in the first quarter, in the first half, if necessary, not wait till halftime to do it. And I just think that's why we started so slow every game and had to play catch-up.
That's an interesting take, and I appreciate your call, Thomas. I mean, Floyd, that goes back to the – like, as much as I defend Mike Mularkey, I have a hard time defending this coaching staff because that's an assistant coach thing, is it not?
I don't know. It's certainly a coordinator thing.
Well, the defense, I think, adjusted pretty well at times to certain stuff. Like, what I want to know is what Belichick changed at halftime that the Titans could not counter when they sacked Mariota on every play in the second half. That's what I want to know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, again, you've heard me say this. I mean, Bill, if Bill sees something in the first series, the second series is going to be different. If he sees something in the second series, third series is going to be different. And they do that perpetually. Everything they do, they change it up. It's always different. Something, and he believes that for you to play in the NFL and win in the NFL, you have to be able to do those things. And if you're a player that can't do that, then you can't play for us because that's going to happen. And I think he's, you know, he probably changed 2, 3, 4 times. I don't know. I mean, but I have no doubt if he saw something that he felt good about, if he thought he could find a way to blitz, bring an extra guy and mess with the running back and blitz pickup, I guarantee he did it.
615-737-1025. Right back to the phones next. After an update, a very serious update about Tom Brady. We will do that next, and then we're back to the phones on Jared and the GM. ESPN 1025, The Game, and 94.9 Game 2, your home for MTSU Blue Raider basketball. Listen to MTSU on 94.9 Game 2 Thursday versus Marshall. Tip off at 7 o'clock and Saturday versus rival Western Kentucky with tip at 6. When in the borough, you can tune into 97.5 for The Game broadcast, 95.1 for Game 2, and of course, every weekday, 2 to 6 in the borough, Jared and the GM on 97.5. Jared and the GM on ESPN 102.5, The Game. Jared and the GM live in the Game National Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. Mount Juliet. This would have been about a 3-hour discussion if this had happened last week and not this week. But big news, this coming from the Boston Herald. Tom Brady jammed his throwing hand at practice after accidentally being run into, according to a source. X-rays, however, show no structural damage. Jamming of a throwing hand, how serious is that for Brady before the AFC title game Sunday?
It's certainly not good. I mean, I don't know what all that would entail. If it's not broken, you know, as long as it's not... I mean, I guess if it was your little finger, you could probably get by with it. If it's your thumb or your forefinger, first finger, middle finger, any of those, you're probably not great.
It just said jammed hand. It didn't say what on the hand got jammed. But, again, if this happened last week, we'd have talked about this for 3 hours.
Yes.
Because this has been the whole show.
Yes.
About it. Brady done, you know.
Absolutely.
Meanwhile, not anymore, not around here. We're on to next season, and we got to figure out who the Titans are going to hire as coach. So we're right back to the phones, where we go to Amir, who's up next. What's up, Amir?
How you doing? I had one question about Mariota not being, like, you know, a franchise quarterback. If he's not, then, like, who is? Because Ryan Tannehill isn't.
It's an interesting take. What Floyd thinks is a franchise quarterback and what I think is a franchise quarterback kind of differ. Like, for you, you
no
almost
got
to be a borderline Hall of Famer to be a franchise quarterback.
To be a franchise. To me, a franchise quarterback is a quarterback that can win regardless. Doesn't mean he's going to win every game. But, you know, if the running game isn't good, he'll go out and throw the ball more and win. If the receivers are down, he'll, you know, make better calls with the run game. If it's whatever the case, Tom Brady kind of guy, you know, anybody that can do those kinds of things. And those guys are few and far between. Now, you know, this is the question I always have when you're asked, you know, do you consider Flacco a franchise quarterback?
I do. I believe he is their franchise quarterback.
Okay. So, you know, if you're happy, if you get a guy that's
he is the quarterback of that. They're not going to draft a guy in the first round this year, are they?
I don't know. It's about time if they don't.
I mean, I feel like if you feel like you're set for the next 5 years at that position. Like, if you feel like take Matthew Stafford in Detroit, right? He doesn't win anything ever, but he is their franchise guy because they picked him number one. He's gonna be their guy until.
So in your world, Tannehill's a franchise quarterback.
I hate Tannehill though.
He's a franchise quarterback. Winston's franchise quarterback.
Like, would you get on your knee and propose to that quarterback? That's the way I look at it. And I think I would propose to, like, I think the last contract the Lions just gave Matthew Stafford is the Lions getting on the knee saying, Matthew, will we be together for forever until death do us part? And then Stafford puts the ring on his finger. That is what I think a franchise, like the relationship between team and franchise quarterback. Like, I feel like Dalton is got a promise ring on, but he doesn't have a wedding ring on, or an engagement ring on.
But by your definition, he's obviously a franchise quarterback.
I mean, I think you could see Cincinnati draft a guy in the first round this year at quarterback. Then he's not. Like, Steve McNair, in my mind, was the franchise quarterback of the Tennessee Titans from 1999, when they became the Titans, until 2005. He was the franchise guy. Vince never officially became the franchise guy because he just never performed at that level. Jake, of course, never was close to being a franchise quarterback. And to me, Marcus is the franchise guy because I think they're going to pay Marcus franchise money. Like, what Washington is unwilling to do is give Kirk Cousins a ring because they just don't think he's their franchise guy. That's just my definition of it. Amerson is up next on Malarkey. What's up, Amerson?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Yep. Jared, I love you, boss, because you don't hedge on your takes and you stick by it and it takes some guts. I'm going to agree and disagree with you today. I just want to propose something that ties it all together. I do think Mariota is a franchise quarterback. I think he's done really well this year, and I agree. I don't think he's regressed. I would say that the Titans had the success that they did despite the coaching. If you take all the bad offensive play calling, special teams, receivers running bad routes, but every time Mariota would go under no huddle, the team seemed to have success. So I was just wondering what your guys' thoughts were on, you know, name another franchise quarterback who had both no stars and a bad coach. So you can't really judge Mariota based on that yet. So I think we've done what we did, actually, despite Malarkey. I don't know what he did coaching other than gelling the locker room together that brought us our success, and I'll hang up and listen.
I would say, first of all, gelling the locker room together and getting them to believe is a very underrated aspect of the things that Mike accomplished. But he did bring up a great point there in that call.
Which was?
I mean, is there a chance that this team actually overcame the coaching? And if they did overcome the coaching, does that mean that if they go out there and get a great coach, or if they go out and get a decent coach, that instead of being 9-7 and losing in the divisional round, they can be 11-5 or 12-4 and maybe be playing New England next year in the AFC title game?
And your response would be?
I don't know. What's your response, though?
I mean, I don't think that's the case. No, but I mean.
It's hard for me to think that the coaching is the problem, though, when you're Mr. This is an 8-8 team and they finish 9-7 both years. So technically they finished better than 8-8.
Well, but you're contemplating whether or not the players overcame the coaching, and then you're really, really mad because they fired the coach.
The one thing I can't understand, I don't understand, that time will tell for us, we'll decide. What is the problem with the wide receivers? You know, like, what is the problem with these wide receivers? Are Davis, Taylor, and Jonnu Smith all busts? At the end of the day, are they all a bunch of busts who can't play in the NFL? Or did this group, Frisman Jackson, Terry Robiskie, can these guys just not coach them? And that's what we're going to find out here. Because if they bring in a new coach with a new offensive coordinator, which we assume will be better, and a new wide receivers coach, which almost has to be better, if they bring in that guy and Davis goes out there and looks like Fred Biletnikoff next year, then we'll know that it was the coaching that held the receiving back. If they bring in all new coaches and the receivers are still garbage, then we know that they're just bust and that John Robinson screwed up drafting those guys. And I don't know the answer to that question yet. For some reason, I think it lies in between. Like, I don't think Davis is going to be a star, but he's got to be better than he was this year. I don't think Taylor is a star, and I think Taylor probably has problems comprehending the playbook, but I also don't think that Taylor is going to, you know, be the deep ball threat that his speed makes you wish that he was. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I mean, it'll be interesting to.
What does your gut tell you it is? Coaching or that they're just not good enough?
I mean, we've been 3 years through this. We've changed the coach 3 times. We've got all new players. I mean, it's obviously something to do with the coaching.
But the coaching has changed.
But wherever it's coming from, I mean, it's obviously they can't. I mean, it's impossible to get it done. It hasn't gotten done in 3 years with different people, different receivers, different, still the same problems we had 3 years ago. So who do you blame? You know, do you blame Davis? Do you blame Matthews? Do you blame, you know, you're thinking, wait a minute now, how many balls did you catch last year, Matthews? And how many did you catch, you know? And so all of a sudden, how does that happen? So, I mean, I think.
And that's what I don't get, because Robiskie is like, in league circles, and maybe correct me if I'm wrong, isn't he a really well-respected receivers coach? You know, like nobody, I think, thinks of Robiskie as a great coordinator, but Robiskie was a really respected receivers coach.
Yeah.
And yet the receivers can't do anything right? See, I wonder if John has the same problem that you and Bill have, and that's that he's just not good at finding receivers.
I don't know.
Because the guy before him wasn't good at finding anything.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't. We've gone through multiple first rounders, multiple second rounders, free agents. We've gone and, you know, here you are.
Well, there was only one second rounder, and that was DGB. Kendall Wright, DGB. Oh, no, two, Justin Hunter. Kendall Wright. Okay, your first rounders, Kendall Wright and Davis. Your second rounders, Justin Hunter and DGB. And your third rounder, Taywan Taylor. The best of the group is the fourth rounder, Tajay Sharp, right? Like, Tajay Sharp probably has the best stats of that whole. Well, Kendall did have a 100-catch season, so maybe Kendall. But, yeah, woof. Right back to the phones next. Jared and the GM, and we're giving something away at the end of the show. It's Jared and the GM on ESPN 102.5, The Game.
He had to work through some injuries that had a lot to do with why those numbers where they were. I think, again, we're going to do, just like I said, we're going to look back at everything, do a self-scout. I can promise you all the interceptions did not fall on Marcus. Okay? I can tell you the last one did not fall on Marcus. I mean, I can go through. It's everybody's involved when it comes to turnovers. And unfortunately, he's the guy that gets pegged for it. He gets that number attached to him. But everybody's involved.
Well, Marcus didn't get fired for all the interceptions, so I guess we learned who's responsible. Jared and the GM, ESPN 102.5, The Game, right to the phones. Kyle is up next on Mariota here on the show. What's up, Kyle?
Hey, fellas. Thanks for taking my call.
Yep.
Y'all were talking about Mariota's development earlier, and I think two of the big things that I didn't see from him this year and that you really look for in a quarterback, in my opinion, in year three, year four, is two things that really separate a franchise quarterback and a guy that's on the fringe like Mariota. One is ball placement. There's a lot of times where Mariota struggles to put the ball in a place where his receivers can catch the ball in a way where they can continue their momentum, get yards after the catch, or he even just hits them to the point where they don't have a choice but to catch the ball. And I know he has a lot of guys that run bad routes and stuff, but, you know, Brady, Rogers, Breeze, their receivers don't always run perfect routes either, and they make throws. You know, that's kind of the difference. And the second thing is, thing that you spoke on earlier, Jared, is him getting killed behind the line is a lot. Offensive line, a lot coaching, and a lot on him. He has to learn how to read a defense, read a blitz. If the coach makes a bad call, change the play call at the line of scrimmage. You're the quarterback. Slide your protection. Do whatever you need to do. And I'd like to get both of y'all's takes on those two things. I appreciate it.
Thanks for the call.
I mean, I think it's hard to disagree with any of that. I think, we were not really good at placing the ball, and part of that is Marcus, and part of that's the routes. I agree with that. And he did have some pressure and, you know, whatnot. I got the feeling that as the year went on, he felt less and less comfortable in the pocket. I don't know if that's because the offensive line was playing poor. I'm not sure if it's because DeMarco wasn't back there and we were worried about blitz pickup. I'm not sure what it was, but he just didn't look comfortable. When he felt it collapsing, you know, generally speaking, when a guy can run like he can, when you feel it collapsing, you're out of there. I mean, there were a couple times where, you know, he went down pretty easy. Not that I blame him. Not that I blame him, because I think it was going to be a tsunami. But generally speaking, with somebody that has that elusiveness, the tendency is you're going to shake and, you know, be out of there. And he wasn't doing that.
I mean, I'll say this. I feel like the one thing Vince Young had that he doesn't, boy, when Vince took off, Vince knew when to go. And then Vince got going. And Vince could really make an impact with his legs. Marcus can make an impact, but he doesn't make an impact enough for what I think he's capable of. And Vince could take a pop from anybody and get right back up. Marcus can't. That's the other day. Every time Marcus runs, he gets hurt.
Yeah. I mean, it's, and you can't go, and it's like the, you know, Mike came out again after the New England game and said, well, he hurt his quad, and because he hurt his quad, it cut the offense, and that. You can't have that.
I was embarrassed for Mike for saying that.
You know what? I mean, you've got to be, you know, Marcus has a tendency to get hurt. So, you know what? You've got to be prepared for if he's limited in some way, shape, or form, either with the calls, with the play selection, what you're trying to do, you know, whatever it may be, or you've got to have as good a backup as some of these other teams, so that if in fact he drops,
Kaepernick,
if he drops, you just bring in whoever the backup is and say, fine, here you go.
Kaepernick. Kaepernick to the Titans. Yeah, maybe not. Lance is up next. What's up, Lance?
Hey, how you doing there tonight?
Good.
Well, Jared, I got a question for you. How many 100-yard games did they have rushing in 2016?
I have no idea.
I got a question for Floyd. How many 100, does that make a difference compared to 2017?
How many 100-yard games did they have? How many 100-yard games did they have in 2016 compared to 2017?
And then my question is, Alex Smith, talk about how great Alex Smith is. Those five, six games he had in a row, did they have a running game? No, they didn't. And then the
interesting
next question
take,
I
Lance.
Have is.
Lance, you got in some great questions. Let's go to Trey, who's up next on the New England game. What's up, Trey?
Hey, how's it going, Jared and GM? Thanks for taking my call.
Yep.
I wanted to just touch on the fact that we talk about that game a little bit, and one of the previous callers kind of said the players kind of achieved despite the coaching. But looking at our team compared to other teams in the playoffs, and we were, you know, realistically seven quarters away from the Super Bowl, we're debating a quarterback that maybe elite, maybe not, definitely not elite core of receivers, except, you know, having our tight end be a receiver who was injured, not having our starting running back and losing the offensive lineman. Where we got and how we performed in that game, it looked very similar to how the Patriots run into and buzz cut just about everybody who runs into them at the playoffs. Why is the coach taking so much heat losing his job when you have a team that I honestly didn't see anyone or any levels of that team that were considered elite throughout the season? We expect them to be elite then, and now he's suffering the punishment.
Good question, Trey. Floyd, your thoughts?
I mean, I think that's the NFL. If you don't, you know, you don't win, if you don't perform up to standards, whatever those standards may be, then I think, you know, there's a chance you're going to be hurt.
Yeah, but doesn't it feel like the Titans maxed out their season by getting to New England in a playoff game? I mean, if big boy Andy Reid chokes away a game to the Titans, who are probably not even on Kansas City's level, yet nothing happens to Andy Reid. Whereas, you know, if Andy Reid had gone and lost to the Patriots, we said, oh, you know, that's as far as Kansas City can get, and no one would have thought twice about it. But you get as far as you can get against the Patriots, and then you fire the coach? Like, that's, I don't know.
No response.
Well, I'm not trying to get anything out of you. I don't know what I make of that.
Pretty simple.
And that is?
I think you know the answer to that.
Well, then why is big boy Andy Reid not out?
I don't know. I'm not Andy Reid's GM. I have no idea.
I mean, Andy lost his offensive coordinator, who got another job despite not giving Kareem Hunt the football. Like, the NFL sometimes doesn't make a lot of sense. I feel bad for the callers we're not going to get to because our callers today were incredible. I don't know how much more coaching search talk we can do. But we will do 4 hours of it tomorrow. We will be live out at Bridgestone Arena for the Preds. The Preds with a huge win last night. An incredible game. Did you watch the game last night, Floyd?
No.
It was an incredible game, and the juice got loose. UC Soros, once again, another shutout. He was incredible. Preds Insiders next. It's ESPN 102.5, the game.